In the middle of the first century, there was really only one place to be, especially in our Eurocentric world. That was the city of Rome. There were about 2 million people who called Rome home. And it was a thriving place economically, politically, and culturally. The Jewish community that lived in Rome had a bit of a turbulent history with the rest of the population. There were about 30 or 40,000 Jewish people living in the city. They kind of formed a ghetto in what was essentially swampland on the other side of the Tiber River from the main part of the city. Over various periods, they were expelled from the city, sent into exile, as was their custom. They certainly knew that from their own experience of living in Israel. And in the year 49, the Emperor Claudius expelled the Jewish community from the city. But when the new emperor, the Emperor Nero that we all know well, came to power in the year 54, he invited the Jewish community to return to the city. And so they did. Things went fairly well, and it was probably during this period that the Messianic Jews, the Christians, began to settle in Rome as well. And it was around this time, at the end of the 50s, perhaps into the early 60s, that the great Peter and Paul also made their way to Rome. Paul, of course, a little bit less free than Peter at this point. But by the middle of that century, Nero was wanting to change the city. He was wanting to raise parts of it, to rebuild the city in his own image and likeness, to set it apart as a very significant kind of city. But members of the Senate were objecting to this. But then on the evening of the 19th of July in the year 64, this fire breaks out. It's a massive fire. It blazes with great intensity for a week. And over the course of that week, great parts of the city are utterly destroyed and many people die. The rumors begin that it's that part of the city that Nero is wanting to transform and to bring about urban renewal, that strangely that's the part of the city that burns. So he needed someone to blame. And the Jewish quarter across the river in the swampland, and of course that's not likely to burn, but that part of the city didn't burn. So the Jewish community became a very convenient scapegoat for the blame of Nero. And so he began this persecution, sending Roman soldiers door to door, asking them, were you responsible for setting fire to the city? And if they didn't point the finger at somebody, they would be taken to the Circus Maximus and put to torture and to death. So it was in the interest of the Jewish community to try and find someone to blame. And so this smaller group of Messianic Jews, the followers of Jesus as the Messiah, were the ones that got the blame. And so it was during this persecution that historians tell us that both Peter and Paul were martyred. But those who were still there in the community, those who were faithfully wanting to preserve the memory and the stories of Jesus, most likely among them was Mark. And he's realizing that if the early leaders, if that first generation of the followers of Jesus are all put to death, if they die without their stories being told, then the memories of Jesus will be lost. So we need to set down and to set out the story of Jesus. And so Mark is the first of the evangelists to do that. There in the city in Rome, in the midst of all of this turmoil, in the midst of the troubles and the persecution, the suffering. I mean, just imagine what it would be like to be part of a community where one by one members of your community are being sought out by Roman soldiers, beaten, tortured, and killed. You know, what an incredible suffering and sorrowing the community would be going through in the midst of all of that. And so this image of suffering is one of the deep images that marks the Gospel of Mark. Just as in the Gospel of Matthew, it's about change and how do you to get through those experiences when the world around you is so turbulent. Matthew writes just after the destruction of Jerusalem, after the year 70 in that first century, Luke writes a little bit later, and he's wanting to ask that question, how do we grow in discipleship? How do we grow in service? And finally, the Gospel of John, written towards the end of that first century, reflects upon this question of how do we live in joy? How do we grow in that experience of just this abundance of light and love the Lord is pouring out upon us? We see in the Gospel of Mark these great stories about going into the wilderness, experiencing all of the trials and the tribulation there, all that terrible experiences. But within all of those darknesses, there's always a hint of light. For example, when Jesus goes into the wilderness to be tempted there for the 40 days, we're told that there were wild beasts there in the wilderness along with Jesus, but there were also angels. So it's this two images that are there, a mark of desperation, but a sign of light, a sign of hope. So this image of crossing this turbulent lake. The disciples, some of them were fishermen, we know, and so they'd been on the lake many times. They knew it well. And we know that it is a very turbulent body of water, that there is this powerful sense that storms do blow up, seemingly out of nowhere. And if you're there in the middle of the lake on a little boat, it's a very precarious position to be in. Many people die and continue to die in the storms that inflict that particular part of the world. So you're there with the disciples in that boat, trying desperately just to get to the other side, to get to a place of safety, when the wind and the waves are just roaring around you, and the power of that scenario. And there is with all the disciples, you know, trying desperately just to row, to get it through this position. And where is Jesus? Mark tells us in this beautiful little detail that he's at the back of the boat, asleep, his head on a cushion. And it's a kind of sign of someone who was there witnessing all of this, seeing, just remembering, what on earth? He just made himself nice and comfortable there with his head on a cushion while the wind and the waves are roaring and the waves are breaking over the boat and you're in fear that the boat itself will be swamped. It's a great image to take to prayer. You know, sometimes when I've prayed with this passage, I've been at the front of the boat with the disciples just freaking out, going, far out, Lord, where are you? Like, where have you gone? Where are you in the midst of all of this trouble, all of these, the wind and the waves? Can't you see that I'm about to be swamped? Can't you see that the boat is about to go down? Like, where are you, God? This passionate, desperate plea. At other times when I prayed, I've realized that I'm down at the back of the boat. I'm there just resting as well, lying next to Jesus, perhaps sometimes even just sharing his cushion, you know, lying there next to him, being able to recognize no matter what happens, no matter what is thrown at me, as long as I stay close to him, everything will be fine. Everything will be okay. But in the story, they go to the back and they just wake him up. I don't know how he's sleeping through the midst of this storm as the boat is tossed around and all of the action and the violence of the storm. But they wake him up, and his declaration to them, his decree to them, to the wind, to the waves, be quiet, be still, be calm. Sometimes in the midst of whatever the world might be throwing at us, whatever is happening in our hearts and in our lives, we can cry out to God. He never promises that there won't be storms. He never promises to us that we will just sail through life beautifully and wonderfully on bright, sunny, blue sky days. That's never been one of the promises of God. But he does promise that when there are storms, when the wind begins to blow and the waves begin to break over the boat, he will be there. He will be with us. He will protect us. We will not drown in the midst of the storm, the wind, and the waves. We can trust him. The church will be tossed about. We as a community will be tossed about. But the one thing we need to do is just to be present, just to stay with Jesus, to trust that the one who has the power, who has the authority over the wind and the waves, will speak into our lives when it's necessary to say, be quiet, become.